Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about all the documents I signed when I was at the car dealership yesterday buying a new car. So I've talked before about documents you sign when you're buying a new car, and I've mentioned before that there's this vortex of paper that happens when you sit down to buy a new car, or a used car even. And so there's so much paper being thrown at you, and so much of it is voluminous in nature, that you couldn't possibly read it all, even if you wanted to. Literally, it's more than a day's worth of reading. So I'm going to go through the documents and explain to you what I signed and why I signed it, and hopefully familiarize yourself with these documents so that next time you buy a car, you'll know a little bit more about what you're signing, what you're buying, and so on. So I got this handy-dandy folder from the dealership yesterday, and all of my papers are in here. And so I can tell you that this might vary slightly from state to state, but for the most part, these documents will sound familiar if you bought a car. So here's what you look for. Number one, the most obvious document that you're going to need is the vehicle purchase order. And the purchase agreement or the purchase order is actually the contract that you're buying the car. And so I've had people say, like, at what point do you own the car? What point are you committed to buying the car? What's the contract? And the contract to buy the car is the purchase agreement, okay? So this is a very typical one. And by the way, when I talk to people who've got defective cars and they say, Steve, I have a Lemon Law case, what documents do you need to see? I usually say the purchase agreement and your repair orders. Purchase agreement contains all the information about the buy. So the date you bought it, the name of the seller, the name of the salesperson, my name as the buyer, my address, my driver's license number, my phone number, make, model, stock, all this stuff about the car I'm buying, the VIN, of course. And it goes through all this important information about what I'm buying. And then as you go down, it has all the numbers for the purchase. So what the car's selling price is. Are there aftermarket accessories? No. Is there a documentary fee? That's common, a couple hundred bucks. Total taxable price. The sales tax I'm paying. The license plate fee. The title and registration fee. And then it has other things. You know, do you have a trade-in? Here's what you're getting for your trade-in. I didn't trade anything in, so no. Rebate, there you go. Down payment, there it is. Here's the amount to be financed because I financed this thing. Boom, there you go. And so all of the information, all the numbers that are important to this deal are right there. And so this creates the contract. Seller, buyer, what we're bargaining over, what the price is, we both sign. So we both sign over here. Now I'll tell you that there's a couple other things on this document you should be aware of. And it's called out here as important buyer information. And so number one, it says any warranties from the manufacturer or supplier are coming from the manufacturer. They're letting you know they're selling you the car as is. And this is extremely common in states that allow as is sales. The dealership is not making any promises about the quality or performance of the goods. They're actually saying we're selling you the car, but the manufacturer is warranting it. Very, very common. Number two, if this is a credit sale, this order is not binding on you and you can cancel it. And recover your deposit until you receive a copy of the document containing the disclosures. So there's a, you know, Truth in Lending Act stuff there. Number three, the interest rate on your credit sale is negotiable. Number four, this is the important one, the salesperson has no authority to make and the dealer shall not be bound by any promises or representations unless they're written here. So when I was talking to my salesman yesterday, I had a great talk with the guy, but I knew that nothing he told me was legally binding because it wasn't reduced to writing on here. Number six, there's some issues here about this sales contract. Number seven, if you're going to sue the dealership over this contract, you've got to do it within 365 days. And by the way, that's something they're allowed to do based on the Uniform Commercial Code, allowing parties to agree to shorten a statute of limitations down to a year by agreement. So here we agreed to do that. So if I wanted to sue the dealership over this transaction, I've got a year to do it. And then on the back are more additional terms, extremely hard to read. But it does say on the front, you know, read the back. So you read the back and, you know, all kinds of definitions and things about the price changes if you ordered the vehicle, and you better have a title for your trade-in, that kind of thing. And then there's another disclaimer here about how the warranties are coming from the manufacturer and so on and so forth. So that is the purchase agreement, common document you're going to sign. So the next thing that I signed, and I just realized I don't have it here. I know where it is. It's sitting on my desk. But it's the application for Michigan title. 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, top left-hand corner, similar information to what the purchase agreement has. Top left corner is the seller, top right corner is the buyer, me. It describes the car being titled, because it's the application for title. And then it has all the information about me and my driver's license because Michigan asks for that. And then there's a column of numbers that contains all the same numbers that are right there. Except, of course, the state simply wants to know one thing. What'd you pay for it? Because we want our taxes. And then on the left-hand side, another section says, you know, are there any disclosures? There's a place for the mileage and the information on your trade-in if you're trading in a vehicle. And then, of course, the mileage of the vehicle you're buying is also recorded there as well because that information gets put onto the title that will eventually be sent to me. And then at the bottom, both parties sign it, and that gets submitted to the state along with the payment of the sales tax and the titling fee. And then I will get my license plate as part of the registration fee. I mentioned already that I've already got that because the dealership was authorized to do that for me. But that's how that transaction works. And that's why people who sign a lot of documents at the dealership are often going, why am I signing documents that look alike? Well, the purchase agreement is between you and the seller. The application for title is between you and the state. So it's parallel, but one is a document between us. One is a state-created document. So then, if you borrow money to buy your car, you finance it, you're going to see one of these. And I'm purposely pointing this out for comic effect because I brought a ruler, tape measure, just to show you that in the old days, we had legal documents that were called legal length paper, 8.5 by 14. Most office papers, 8.5 by 11. This right here is 8.5 by 25.5. Okay. So this thing right here is 11 inches longer than legal paper. Michigan vehicle retail installment contract. Yes, it's lengthy, but it starts at the top with the buyer, me, creditor, that's them, which is the seller also. And we've talked before about how third-party installment contracts go. I buy the car from a seller, and I agree to make payments to the seller, but then they assign that loan to Ford Motor Credit or whoever, and then I make my payments to Ford Motor Credit. So that's why, if you look at this, it goes the creditor is the dealership. But we all know I agreed to get this car because I'm getting financed through Ford Motor Credit. And then it talks about the vehicle being new, 17 miles, year make, model, VIN. And then again, we have the same information here, the amount being financed, and it's the vehicle price, documentary fees, sales tax, all these things. And then there's a rebate, there's a cash down payment. And then you go through here. And by the way, there's a bunch of other stuff in here about credit, life, and disability, which I didn't buy, and I'll explain that in a second. But all that stuff is all paid, you know, it's all spelled out here as to what you're paying for. And one of the things I advise people to do in particular is people will often look at the top number, what I paid for the car, and the bottom number and go, eh, looks close enough. And you got to go in there and look because underneath the price of the vehicle, it goes A, vehicle, B, accessory, C, documentary, D, sales tax. And it goes E, F, G, H, I, J. And all of those are blank on mine. N, A, N, A, N, A, N, A. That's where they're going to start sticking stuff in there. Pinstripes. True coat, you know, whatever it is, they're going to slide it in right there. So make sure that everything on here is either something that you asked for or you're actually required to buy. And be aware of the things that they tell you you're required to buy. Like I said before, if you're buying an RV and they say, oh, you're required to let us inspect it, and we're going to charge you $1,000 for that. You know, so somewhere on here, you'll find a row of boxes and it's called the Truth in Lending Disclosures. And it's often at the top of the contract, but it depends. But it's as long as it's available to you. And the Truth in Lending Act is a federal law, sometimes called TILA for its initials. But it lays out the percentage rate of your loan, the finance charge you'll be paying over the life of the loan, the amount you're financing, the total amount of your payments. So this is to let you know that if you're buying something and you're putting nothing down, but you're paying a huge interest rate, you're going to find out what the life of the loan is going to cost you in interest. And so then it says total sale price is listed here. And then it lists your down payment. So in my case, I got 0.0% financing, which that's why I'm financing it. It's like, why would you pay cash if you can pay cash over time at 0% financing? 0.0. So finance charge, zero. And then, of course, it has a schedule. Goes, you're going to be making this many payments and how much your payments are and when your payments are due and when your first one is due and so on and so forth. So you need to know all of this stuff. So that's all there. And then, of course, we've got some other provisions down here. And then you sign down here, and they sign down here, and you've got yourself a legally binding contract. And then, of course, on the back, we have more legalese than a team of lawyers could draft in an afternoon. But it talks all about how you must make payments. If it's a balloon contract, which doesn't apply to me, if you damage the collateral, because the car right now, although you own it, is collateral for the bank's loan. It explains how the security interest works. It explains how you can use the car. It explains what happens if you default on the loan, what they can do, what they can't do, how they can repossess the car, how you can redeem the car if it gets repossessed, what they'll do with the car if you don't redeem it, what they're going to charge you with respect to how they can charge you for, you know, repossession, how they handle your consumer reports, and so on. And then there's another thing down here that says, notice any holder of his consumer credit contract is subject to all claims and defenses. That's the holder rule, and I've done videos on that. And then it does have a thing at the bottom about your arbitration agreement, and you're agreeing to arbitrate claims you have against Ford Motor Credit in this instance. So I can tell you that in my entire career, I don't think I've ever had a standalone claim against Ford Motor Credit, meaning I've never sued them without other parties being involved, usually the manufacturer being involved because they built the car. That's the subject matter of the underlying lawsuit. I did get a receipt for my down payment, which was nice. Of course, I cut them a check, so I'll get the canceled check back. That'll be evidence of that as well. And then I did get a standalone odometer disclosure statement for the new vehicle. And it does say, you know, that they actually swear under penalty of perjury that the vehicle's got 17 miles on it at delivery. And that is correct to the best of their knowledge. And again, make, model, VIN, and all that stuff. And it was signed by them, signed by me, and I got a copy of it. So like I've always said, is that when you're in a transaction where you're signing paperwork, whatever it is, you're going to want to always get copies of your paperwork to prove that, you know, you can later show what you signed and didn't sign. I also got this document, and I don't think I have a signature on here, but they gave it to me, and it's a disclosure because anytime you give somebody your financial information, your social security number, you authorize them to do a credit check on you, you're going to borrow money, and they'll often, you know that they're going to run your credit, right? I mean, that's why you give it to them. But they actually give you this form here and says, you know, what do we do with your personal information? And they explain to you, because of federal law controlling some of this, that they're, number one, they're going to follow the law. But number two, the things we're going to do here, if you disagree with any of the things we're doing that are optional, let us know. And there's a whole thing about how you can contact us and let us know that. So another disclosure form, read it, understand it, but it's pretty straightforward. A couple copies of my insurance, which I had faxed over to them or sent over to them, and they included it in the package. And then there's one other document, which I did not get a copy of, but I remember signing it. And I might be out there with my application for title, is I signed the document saying that I'm passing. I'm not purchasing the credit life disability gap and the other stuff. And now, whether you want to buy that stuff is up to you. I'm not a big fan of any of those, but, you know, if you want to, go right ahead. But you can shop around, meaning you don't have to buy it from your dealer. You might be able to get it from your own insurance agent. And there's a big debate about that. But the reason they have you sign a form saying, I don't want this stuff. I've had people say, Steve, is that a sales tool? Are they just doing that to scare me, to make me think, oh, this is so important, I better sign something? And you know something? I think it works both ways. I am convinced that in the history of car dealers, back in the past, there has to have been at least one occasion, if not thousands, where somebody buys a brand new car and they're asked, do you want gap insurance? And somebody goes, what's gap insurance? Well, that's if you drive off the lot and you get T-boned at the first intersection there. When you file a claim with your insurance company, they're going to say, well, you're driving a used car. And you say, no, it's brand new. I bought it 3 minutes earlier. And they're going to go, nah, it's still considered used. So we're going to, you know, do some comps on some low mileage used cars, and here's what we're going to pay you. And the amount they're going to pay you is substantially less than what you owe, creating a gap. And if you want that gap made up, you can buy a policy against that. It's going to cost you not a whole lot of money, but it's worth it. You know, it's one of those things. And so, again, if you want to buy it, buy it. You don't have to. So I assure you that in the past, there was somebody out there who had that discussion and said, you know, I don't think so. Got in their car, drove the first intersection, and got T-boned by somebody. They're talking to their insurance agent about how they're getting ripped off. And the agent goes, well, you know, that's why you should have bought the gap. The person goes, gap. That's right. I talked to the salesman about that. And people often remember what they want to remember. not necessarily what happened, but what they wish happened. And I'm convinced, I'm sure it happened. I'm positive that there's somebody out there who said, I did buy gap insurance. I talked to the guy, he explained to me what it was, and I told him I wanted it. So they go back in the dealer and they go, look, I want to file a claim on the gap insurance because I bought it and I got in a T-bone accident right over at the light, just like the guy predicted. Weird thing. And they go, you didn't buy it. And what do you mean I didn't buy it? And they go, well, you know, if you had bought it, let's take a look at these documents that you signed. If you'd bought it, it would have been on this document. It would have said gap. It doesn't say gap insurance there. Or if you'd bought it and you'd financed it along with everything else, it would be about 14 inches down on this 25-inch document. Again, it's not there. Don't know what to tell you, but you didn't buy it. And I guarantee you that there's somebody out there who went ballistic, nuclear ballistic, because they're like, I remember talking to the guy and I told him I wanted it. And they say, but look, you didn't buy it. And they say, well, I didn't read these documents. I was just signing documents. It's that paper vortex that Leto guy's always rambling about. So to protect themselves in the future, they create a document. It's a single page. And it simply says, I, the buyer, have had these options explained to me. Gap, credit life disability, true coat, whatever it is. And I choose not to buy them. And they have you check the boxes, initial whatever, and sign it. And now, does it act as a tool of sales? Yes, it does. Obviously, it does. They say, by the way, you're opting not to buy this stuff here. Sign there to so indicate. Yes, someone's going to go, it's that serious. I'm signing a document confirming I didn't get it. They didn't ask me to sign a document when I waived the fabric protection. And they didn't ask me to sign a document when I waived the nitrogen rotation of my tires. I think I better get this. So I wouldn't be surprised if it works as a sales tool. But I also think that in the past, there has to have been at least one dealership where somebody came back screaming, going, I bought this. I know I bought this. And if you didn't put it down there, it's simply because you screwed up. You screwed up. So to protect themselves, that's what I think it came from. So again, if there's somebody out in the business who knows and can actually give me examples of something else, another logical explanation, I'd love to hear that as well. But simply put, those are all the documents I signed yesterday. It's a pretty typical automobile sales transaction. If you're buying a used car, the only real difference that I can think of, besides having a different box checked on everything where it says new or used, is a Monroney document, the buyer's guide. That document would be part of the sales transaction as well. Simply it's something you would see because it would be in the window of the car you're looking at when you're looking to purchase it. And then again, they're also going to really push hard on you to buy an aftermarket warranty of some sort. Oh, and again, if I had wanted to buy, like say, an extended service plan for this vehicle, there would have been another document I would have signed for that as well, along with having it inserted into the purchase agreement and the loan document. So that's all the stuff I signed yesterday buying my brand new Ford Explorer. Questions or comments? Put them below. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.